Good morning from sunny Sacramento. It is the Wise Words with One Gun Show on Blog Talk Radio, and we got a new submission from Jimmy Malone. It's called A New Day.
Right on, right on. You know, power of life and death is in the tongue. And so we have to watch what we say to one another. We have to be real careful about the words we choose. Listen, children.
You remember back in the day, poet asked, what's going on? We fight the power, prepare of harvest for the world. But now it seems those days are gone. We treat each other just like the enemy, instead of like we should. Sisters and brothers in one big family, looking towards each other's good. Just be careful what you call me.
Careful what you call me.
Just be careful what you say.
Just be careful what you say.
Time has come for us to realize that it's a new day.
New day.
It's a new day. Oh, children, don't you know that it's a new day? Have become a battlefield
where
children learn to hate. We've got to teach them about using words of
love
before it's too late. Listen to me, just be careful what you call me.
Brother, what you call me.
Just be careful what you say. Time has come for us to realize it's a new day, new day. It's a new day. Just be careful what you call me.
Brother, what you call me.
Just be careful what you say. Time has come for us to realize that it's a new day, new day. It's a new day. Certain songs may break your bones, yeah, but
Black man, what you doing around here? You looking at me all crazy, but you the same one that brought me around here. What you mad for? Why you tripping? Same word two ways is contradicted. Think you're the man I'm supposed to fall back like Pippin. I need yours to get mine. I'll stop simping, and it blows my mind. 33 the same age Jesus died, and you've been living the lies. You be thinking that's why he's glorified. Ask yourself, if you could really turn back the hands of time, would you feel like R. Kelly and wish you were mine, or wish I could fly? But we'll throw it in the past, fist in the air, got the world on smash. Throw it in the past, fist in the air, if you love being black. Just another, just another, you know, just another, you put in what you put out. Just another, what you expect? Exactly what you call yourself. Just reap what you sow.
Don't you know that you?
Just another,
what you call yourself? Oh, my children.
Don't end up being like everybody else.
Words can hurt us. Oh, my God. What you call yourself?
Yeah.
the sound that was submitted to the station from Jimmy Malone of Sacramento. It's called A New Day. Man, that one right there is fire. But I got another request, came from Double R, who stays in the car. Double R, this one's for you, and we'll get straight to the business right after this.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we
and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
After I came from the men's healing circle, and I really wanted to know what's going on. And man, you know, when you listen to some of these old songs, man, and you really marinate on what they're saying and, you know, what they're displaying, it touched the soul. It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm going to the host with the most, Mr. Marvell Wilson. Marvell.
Yes, good morning, brother, and good morning to our contributors, with the regular and faithful contributors, as well as to our worldwide listening audience. We are once again appreciative of your attendance and your participation, and we look forward to having another session that stirs up the spirit and urges one to do their best thinking.
I say. I got Double R in the car. Double R, pull up.
Double R in the car with Honorable Bishop Henry Williams. Say hello to the world, Bishop. Bishop? He on there. He'll know. So he 89, man. So he'll get cracking.
I was getting ready to say, that's 89. Because, you know, I do that at 70.
Big money grip.
All right. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Hello, everybody. Good morning, Bishop Turner.
Joe.
Yes, sir. How you doing this morning, guys? Everything seems to be okay.
Ashe. Mama Chocolate.
Good morning. Grand Risers. This is a beautiful day in my neighborhood today.
Ashe. Sherman.
Good morning, my brothers and sisters in God. Hope you're having a wonderful day. And, man, why you got to play some Marvin Gaye this early in the morning, man?
You know why.
I say, Mark not in the dark, but Mark the disciple.
Grand Rising Kings and Queens, it is a blessed, beautiful day out here. It's a glorious day to be fishing.
Where you at?
Camp Pollock. Pollock.
Oh, you done went and snuck over there. You got a bass yet?
No, I just got here, just pulled up. I got Mitch with me.
Oh, shoot. Y'all going to steal fish if you don't catch fish. Oops, my mic is on. Hey, man, listen. We worldwide right here on the Wise Words of One Gone Show, man. And it is an honor and a privilege to be here amongst my brothers and sisters here on this station, man. Today is a free day of conversation, right? Somebody that went through something that they really just need to get off their chest, and we're going to open the line for that. Then I'm going to turn it over to Marvell, the host with the most. So is there somebody that went through something since the last 24 hours? Somebody that went through something that you had to scratch your head and say, I know that didn't just happen. Will there be one? Oh, it's good then. Man, I love it. We going to the host with the most, Mr. Marvell Wilson. Marvell!
Yes. Okay, so I hope Brother Williams find his way on, because let me tell you something, Tim. I need you to text me Dale's number. You know, our attorney. Oh, because I called the number I thought was his, and it didn't sound like his voice, but I was explaining what was going on. And when I said, okay, well, the brother has some legal matters that seem to be worth looking into, and I'm bringing it to you to see if you're willing to consider it. And he said, I'll think about it, and hung up. So it didn't sound like Dale. Maybe I dialed the wrong number, so I'm going to need to get that number to contact Dale so that I can see if he's willing to help Brother Williams look at his stuff a little more in-depthly, right? Because he's saying that he has legal issues, and he just needs some help. From a trusted servant, not just somebody that got a title, but somebody that's got some integrity that he could trust. So I want to make sure that at the end of this broadcast, that I get that number and try to call Dale. I hope that wasn't him. I hope I had the wrong number, because he was kind of abrupt. But anyway, the two pieces that you played just stimulated me to think about what are the concerns that we have about how things are, and how they affect our sensitivities, because, you know, I've noticed that, like the brother said, how be careful what you call me, right? And I've observed that even with myself, I'll start with myself, is that I, for a long time, I was anticipating someone saying something that was unseemly, uncomely to me. So I was prepared for someone to say something cutting, or someone to say something snide, or someone to say something sarcastic. And I found myself always guarded in communication, anticipating that someone is going to say something that possibly could hurt my feelings if I'm not prepared. And I think over a period of time, I started getting to the point where when someone says something kind to me, I think they up to something. I'm trying to look behind the scenes to see what's the motivation. Was this game or something? You saying something kind to me, or you complimenting me, or you're giving me upholding something that I've demonstrated that you say you approve of. It started to get to the point where it was difficult for me to accept a compliment because I was so prepared to be guarded against language that was usually offensive. I mean, we're so good with that we turn what's good now, we call it bad. Man, that's a badass whatever, right? So that's the kind of thing that I've observed that the brothers was talking about at first, in the first piece. And then, of course, Marvin Gaye is pointing out all the things that are out of order that seem to be unchecked. And the question still is, how do we bring full circle back to the level-headedness that we practice with each other and the sensitivities that we have toward each other, and then help correct those things that Marvin was talking about in his piece? Because we do have that power and ability. We do have it. We have it. And the flow that we create collectively, and I keep on emphasizing that, and that's what we always emphasize here, is collectivism. The flow that we create collectively is a frequency that has almost, I'd say, a 95% likelihood to take hold, just like our music, just like our athleticism, just like all of the other things that we put in the atmosphere spiritually and physically, they work. So it's our emotional concerns that is important, I think, for us to focus on and to make corrections on, is where we are emotionally, because everywhere else, we on point.
Hello, Brother Reggie.
You there, Mr. Williams?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we waiting on you. Holler at us.
Okay. Okay, you ready? Okay, hello.
Yes.
Yeah, hello, yeah, this is Bishop Williams. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning to you, brother.
Look, I'm going to speak and answer on, yes, what you were speaking on, and Marvin Gaye.
Okay, what's going on?
Yeah. What's going on? That's there. You know, Double R requests that because that's a question that not only do we can ask, but we can probably answer. What's going on? What's going on is we're not being acknowledged by ourselves and by others the way that we deserve to be acknowledged. That's what's going on. But what is also going on is we're waking up, and we're opening our eyes and our minds and our hearts to the truth that we are too much alike and have too much of like experiences not to work together. So that's what's going on, and that's what's going to go on, as we continue on this venture to find our place in this country. What you say, brother?
We have the First Lady of Radio, Miss Clarice, just joining us. Would you like to say hello to the world? We're worldwide today.
Yes, excuse me. Yes, I would like to say hello. I'll be off and on listening, but I may not say something, but more later. But yes, I'm with whatever's going on. I'm in there.
Ashe. Bishop Williams. Okay, the bishop might have fell off.
Have Bishop Williams talk about the railroad. Give him something specific to talk about.
If we can get him to talk.
Bishop.
Okay, we're going to keep moving, and when Bishop can get back on, we'll put him in the mix. But right now, we got a beautiful day ahead of us, right? Every day is a beautiful day, no matter how the circumstances and issues come about. You got breath, see? You got breath, and with breath, you can do some things. You can change some things. So with that being said, I appreciate the Most High for giving me this day to rejoice and be glad in, just like Big Money Grip said, and I won't squander it away. I'm going to make something happen today. You better believe that. That's wise words from One Gone. All right, so Bishop, are you there? Okay, Marvell, we're going to keep moving.
All right. Well, you know, he dubs in, and he serves it out when he dubs in. So we'll just anticipate that he'll come on in. But in the meantime, if we hope that someone can mute until.
Please,
you know,
everyone, mute your phone unless you're speaking. Mute your phone. I hear somebody in the background. Probably got that little allergy that I had, and I might have passed it through the phone. So go ahead on and mute yourself before you pass it back to me.
All right, double on here. Man. Can I add to this? What's going on? This has been heavy on me this week. Big Money Griff said that something happened between him and Bishop. And they said over a woman. That took me back to the 70s. Now, listen to this. Listen. Y'all are powerful to us men. Back in the 70s, I grew up on 59th and Crenshaw, which you can say with the rolling 60s. And the rolling 60s was partners with the A-Trade gangsters. It came that in the 70s that it was a girl in between these two men. They came and they wanted to fight. The fight turned into a murder. The first ever Crip-on-Crip murder ever in history. The war is still today between the Rolling 60s and the 8-Trade gangsters over a girl. Now, we black men, listen, King, we have to be able to talk about different things and not let women get in between us. And Queens, I need y'all to be strong. Tell us, men, that it ain't that serious. It's still today going on. Murders, the most murders, Monster Cody, rest in peace, he died. And he said that was the most terrible thing that happened between the gangbangers in L.A. when the Crips start killing the Crips. And now, Big Money Griff and you, Bishop, I don't want to ever y'all hear nothing. I don't want to hear nothing about y'all saying that nothing came in between you guys over a woman. And I yield.
Wow,
that's deep. Well, the only thing I can say is that it is what it is, and I got to keep it real. I got to keep it 100. That's all I know is 100 at the age of 74, and I got to give you some more. And if I have to give you some more, all I can say is that she came over to my apartment. I gave her all the documentation of substantiation and verification of who I was and what I'd done down through the years. Because, see, a lot of y'all don't know. I used to be against police brutality, and I've done some things here in Los Angeles. And I showed her that. And so she invited me to come out to Sacramento. I come out to Sacramento with my gear and stuff. And then she's going to make me sit up there all hours of the night and not introduce me or not say nothing to me. Man, I had a problem with that. And so did the audience. And so you don't bring nobody from Los Angeles all the way here and find out that you know what I told you, Double R. I got there and the place was all junky and stuff. It was unclean and stuff, and they had to clean it up and everything, and whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. And so the bottom line is, you don't disrespect an elder brother like me. You don't do that. Y'all know who I am. Y'all have heard what I've done and how I participate in our conversation over these last couple of weeks. Y'all know, y'all should have some good feel about me. I'm not no fake, I'm not no phony, and I'm not no fraud. But I know the real deal. I know the real deal. And I know if a person has alienated another person from me. I've been knowing Brother Bishop for years. Years! We'd go back at least 15 years. Come on, man. We used to call each other on the phone and stuff. That's why I'm the only one sitting up here talking about the railroads. How do I know about the railroads? Because he convinced me about the railroads. I know about the railroads, but now I ain't got nothing to do with it. Let y'all do something with the railroads. But I know what needs to be done. I can share, you know, share and show how I care. But please, understand. When I take a stand as a black man about what I know, like that nose is on my face, I knows what I'm talking about. This woman came between us, and she alienated him from me. And we ain't going to be sitting up in no reparations meeting no 3 or 4 hours, and he don't have nothing to say to me, and I don't have nothing to say to him, and then we walk by each other, hey, big money, and that's all we got to say, and we getting ready to break for lunch, break bread and stuff, and ain't nothing to be said. Something wrong with that picture, man. Something wrong with that picture. So I gotta be keeping 100, man. I gotta keep it 100, and I ain't gonna change. I ain't gonna change now. I gotta keep it 100. He can say whatever, Bishop can say whatever he wanna say, but I know the truth. I'm the truth. I'm the truth. And the light for you to see. I know what we've been through, and I know what went on. And I know it wasn't real.
If I may intercede, I'm glad. Yeah, I don't want to intercede. I'm glad you're allowing the floor. It's just I don't can't speak for everybody, but what I'm hearing appears still to be a resistance to reconciliation, and I'm wondering why that would exist. Because you know we say we're speaking the truth. But a lot of times we're just speaking our truth, and our truth is valid to us. However, if we're not open to someone else's truth, then we might be stuck without the ability to be versatile and look at things in another perspective. So I'm just curious to know why that moment or that incident is strong enough to keep two brothers from communicating and reconciling. That's what I want to know. 15 years can be doused out in one incident. I don't get it. So, you know, you profiled you profiled a lot of information that led up to just this one experience, seemingly. And that one experience cost y'all everything y'all had invested in each other. I want to know why.
Well, keep in mind now, look, Marvell, the only thing I can tell you, it wasn't one experience. Keep in mind now, I told you I drove up from California, from Los Angeles to Sacramento 3 times. 6 hours. 6 hours just to speak for 2 lousy minutes. And during that time, you know, we had some time together, and I had a booth. I'm the only one up there with a booth. I came up there with
stuff in my car. Okay, and Brother Griff, just, you're animated and I can see you're excited, but you're kind of yelling. And moreover, I'm just asking this question right here. You say that she did what she did. I want to know what Brother Williams did.
Nothing from nothing is nothing.
Oh, okay. That's how you gonna handle that, huh? I don't get what that means. All I'm asking you is the floor has been seized by this dissension that exists, this division that exists between two brothers who have a history of 15 years of interaction, and then I only hear about those three times that you were kind of inconvenienced. But it didn't have anything to do or very little to do with Brother Williams. So I don't understand why you guys are not able to mend the concern.
Well, the only thing I could say is that we should have been able to cordially respect each other by acknowledging another. How you doing, Bishop? What's going on, Big Money? At least do that. At least do that.
Did you do your part?
I'm doing. Come on, man.
Can I interject, gentlemen?
Yes.
I didn't hear everything that was going on, but I just know that it's been tension between two or three people on this panel, on this floor, on this platform, and I want to say one word: forgiveness. What about forgiving? Because whatever that problem was or whatever that dispute was, you have to be able to swallow and forgive. That doesn't mean you forget, but forgive and let's move on. Or is there a way that you guys can sit down cordially, voice your opinions about what you think of that person, what you think of the next person, and then move on? Because this is an ongoing thing, and I can hear it on both ends that it hurts both of you guys, but it disrupts the whole platform that we're here on, and we're trying to make a difference. And so I think right now we need to just forgive one another. And like I said, forgiveness is not just for that person. It's for you. Ashe.
I received that, and I don't have a problem with that. That's why I did what I did and said what I said the way I said it yesterday and the day before in regards to how we can move on as brothers. In regards to
y'all let Big Money do all the talking.
Wait, now you can talk. We was trying to get you talk. Let him. Y'all ready for Bishop? I got him back on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as long as
I appreciate Big Money. I appreciate everybody I've been communicating with and everything like this. But this morning, I didn't call there to talk about this. I called there to talk about something. It's important for all our peoples, okay? And what I'm doing.
This is me. I brought this up, Bishop, and I need you guys to iron this out.
It's all not with me.
Okay.
I love Big Money, man. When but
there it is. There it is. We also got Manny for Governor on here. So, Manny, I see you on here. But, Bishop, you said it all right there. I love my brother.
Don't cut me off. You didn't cut Big Money off. Don't cut me off. Let me finish, okay?
Go ahead.
I said I love Big Money. When my family flew down to my oldest brother's funeral there in L.A. and everything, and they had nobody, my sister and brother, was at the airport, didn't have nobody to pick him up. I called Big Money. Big Money went out to the airport, picked him up, took him out to dinner, breakfast, and then took them where they had to go. I love that man. I appreciate that man. But we haven't been communicating with him in about 25 or 30 years. But I love him,
But I'm just saying, this is the first time. When first meeting, I saw him was in Oakland. I saw him in Oakland. And I didn't know who he was. I recognized him, but I didn't really know who he was until he was walking out there. He was leaving. Okay? In Oakland, I didn't get to say nothing to him. Okay? I was in Oakland in the first meeting, okay, before I went to Sacramento and also San Diego. But look, but what I want to say is and he's speaking about the railroads, and I want something important I want to say this morning about the railroad, because people don't know who I really am, okay? And that's what I want to put out here this morning, okay? I'm an attorney in this. I'm a power of attorney general for the state of California. I filed a $250 billion lawsuit in 2005 against the railroad companies. And I got a movie was done by Channel 7 of me walking the railroads in West Oakland here, okay? It's on a VHS, and I want to bring all that out. I want the world to see it, people to see it. And I have something going on about town. I'm going to put the case back in court again. The jury dismissed it 2005. I'm going to put it back in there again, but I'm going to add new charges. My new charges, I'm not filing for the $250 billion. I'm filing for $500 million against the railroad companies. And I'm not putting it in the America's court. I'm going to file it in the world's court. Okay? Okay, now what I need right now is writers to help me write up the case, paralegal and lawyer to help me write it up. I got everything to put in the case. And everything, what they did to blacks and here in the 1800s. They murdered almost 100 young black men, the railroad companies, right here in Bay Point, going into Richmond, right here, and going into Richmond in California, okay? They had a silversmith mine, the railroad companies, and they worked almost 100 young black men to death in a silversmith mine. They are 12 years old. They all died with lung cancer. So that's why I'm adding that other $500 billion.
Okay, so this is civil and criminal.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going in the world's court. It's going to be a lot difficult going to world's court. It's not going in America's court.
Okay, we have a brother on here that got an attorney for you. Who said that, Marvell, or was that Tim?
Let me just add to that what I'm saying. And everybody on this committee, everybody that's calling in and everything can be on my business committee to receive $2 million from this case. The case being filed for $500 billion. Okay? And it's already been written up and been proved. I'm just adding to it. Channel 7 lawyers had to go through all the way through the case before they could air it. And the report come back that the Channel 7 lawyers said it was the best case that they ever read. The best case they ever read. That's saying something, you know. But people don't listen to me. Behind it, I don't have a lot of friends behind it because people don't like me. A lot of people, black people, act like they hate me and what I'm doing. But I wasn't sent by no man or nothing. I was sent by God. Called me. Send me there like it did Moses and Joshua. I told Preacher Junior, I say, y'all won't know who I am until you get to heaven. and you see me over there with the other different apostles. Okay, because I've been ordained by Jesus. He said he ordained me when I was in my mother's womb. That's what he told me when he raised me from the dead, 1968.
Well, Bishop, this is Manny Smith, the governor. I appreciate you. You know I love you, too. And I thank you for the love that you sent. I just want to say to you, Bishop, I'm down with you in the railroads and the ports.
And you're on my business committee with nobody else, man.
Yes, sir.
You're going to
yes,
get your $2 million
but
when the money comes in.
I'll tell you this, Bishop. I don't know how long it is for the $500 billion to come through, but our people need something there. And so that's why I'm asking you, and I have asked you in the past, to stand with me on this case, because it's not $500 billion, but we're going to hit them for $1 billion. They've lost all the cameras. They don't know anything.
And they're trying
to put me away. And they tried to foreclose on my house.
Finish, Bishop.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Bishop. Yes, sir. No. Let Bishop talk. He's an OG, and I'm going
to
respect my elders.
Listen, I got something
to
add to that, okay?
This weekend,
I have a plan to put in a black Wall Street in Oakland, all black businesses in West Oakland. And that $1 billion missing there from the 880 Cypress Freeway and this Caltrans City.
With all due respect, Bishop, I can't give up the whole $1 billion for one project because this is going to
I'm just saying something just like Big Money was saying. Can I just say something? Listen, then you don't have to do that. Listen to me.
I'll go back on my bad, Bishop.
Okay, I got a date at City Hall. I'm standing in front of City Hall Saturday from the mayor's office, okay, with Black History Reparation Field Day, okay, what's going on here in Oakland and what's happening. A lot of people can't see. We are all slaves under the people, all the boat peoples and everything here, all the other people. Coming over here, and Black Fred get together and talk about the issue, what's going on, and how they treating everybody else over us right now. They're showing us that we're nothing but slaves right now. How they take care of the boat people, paying everything for them, people committing crime, coming over here committing crimes, and the president freeing them. I want them to do no time in jail and won't send them back to their country. Yeah, nothing like that.
Bishop, we don't have, we talked about this, and I apologize for cutting you off, but we have to get to the moment at hand, Bishop, and you're talking about the right numbers. We got to go for big numbers, but we also know the problem, so we got to talk about solutions, Bishop. And as a legacy pioneer person in Black cohesion, you understand what it takes. And so I want you to stay on the railroads and the ports, Bishop. I want you, that's important. You understand? Because that is done without the lawsuit. You can still get those things. And so, Bishop,
well,
stay focused.
I'm going
to get back off your line. Go ahead.
Huh?
You go ahead, Bishop. Just stay focused on the railroads and the ports, please.
I am. I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm bringing in young people. I'm going to educate the young people what's going on. I have a black students. Okay, I got to bring them in because we're leaving them out. You know, we look and see what the white students doing, but our black students still laying out there with no support, no help, no advice. I'm going to build a black university here too in Oakland. All blackness in this city. It's going to happen. I'm going to put it all on paper. I might not be here when the money come in, but that's where it's going to be found. God bless you, man. I got to get off and eat my breakfast. I have to talk to y'all later. God bless y'all. I appreciate
Bishop, you
love only.
You stay around for some discussion sometime. Just don't say your piece and leave every time you come talk to her. Love you, Bishop.
Big
thank
money,
you.
I love you, man.
I love you too, Bishop. All right. Thanks for letting
you,
me hear that, man. I needed to hear that from you, Bishop, because I've been hurt. I ain't going to lie. I've been hurt. That's why I brought it up. But now, in retrospect of the railroads, because I'm the one who brought up the railroads, I think we should have crimes against humanity, for the record, let the record reflect, for the world stage to hear. Crimes against humanity. I also heard you say something about they all died of cancer. We've got to be able to show that this was a form of cancer that was done to all these individuals. How many individuals lost their lives on the railroad? In addition to that, last but not least, what I heard and what I'm sharing with you all that are listening to the sound of my voice is that there is no statute of limitations for murder. I digress. I land my plane. I'm the pilot. I'm going to land my plane.
Right.
I'm out.
All these kids died with lung cancer. Well, they in the silversmith mine, they all died 12 years old with a lung cancer. There's a graveyard on both ends. On this end of Point Bay and out there by the water. So they put a tube all the way through there. Today they got trains running all the way through there now. I'm going to ride the train. I've been planning to ride the train through that mine one day. I'm going to do that. And I'm trying to get a writer to write about all this. So a lot of things about us and what happened and not brought out there.
God help those who help themselves. Don't depend on nobody else because people ain't looking to help you these days. But to Bishop and Big Money, I appreciate both of y'all for bringing the railroad and the port situation to fruition and to the people's attention. And I'd just like to say that I support you guys. I stand behind you guys on what you want to do with that. I know there's plenty of bodies buried, but until we have a real army, something that can protect us, it's so much black blood under the soil of America that we're going to have a difficult time solving that problem without, you know, figuring out real solutions that don't involve
okay,
bloodshed.
I'm going to eat my breakfast, y'all. I got to do
okay,
that.
Okay, bro.
All right, bro.
But give
me money, my phone number. Give me money, my phone number, so he can call me.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, that's, see, over everything else that we hear heard, we can look toward the future about what we can do to assist the railroad situation and the lawsuits as well as the offenses that might be considered felonious and therefore go to criminal court. But the most important thing for me was the reconciliation between these two brothers right here, right now. That was the most important moving thing for me because that's how we're going to consolidate our energies and make stuff happen and use our network to get what's needed to assist this brother Williams in his venture. So, again, I ask for the number. I'm hoping that the guy that I talked to, because I have a number for who I thought it was, the attorney that's in our umbrella, but in our midst, we have an attorney that's very, very efficient in a lot of areas. I don't know if this is his area, but he might be able to refer us to someone who has the integrity that he operates with that can assist the brother Williams with his concern. And I'm going to get that number and call him.
I'll text it to you, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to cross refer and see if it's the same number because if it is, I don't know. I don't know because that was kind of abrupt. You said I'll think about it and just hung up, right? But it didn't sound like Dale, so that's the plus about it. But I'm going to shake that down and see if we can give a referral to the brother for someone in the legal realm that that's trustworthy, you know, and someone that we can sort of like build on what he has to make this thing get where it's supposed to get. But in the meantime, I'm pleased, and I hope that everyone else recognizes the reconciliation that occurred between these two brothers. And I'm pleased to hear that that's taking place and that you guys are going to take that forward because, you know, time is of the essence for all of us. And the more we advance in our ages, the less time we have to not reconcile issues and reconcile our relationships with people that we have established a rapport with. So I'm glad to hear that that's going to take place, and I'd like a report on that, you know, if there's a willingness after y'all have a conversation, Brother Griff. So anyway, we were talking about would Marvin Gaye say what's going on, and then we started talking about what's going on in our hearts and in our minds as we grow. We're growing into a concept of understanding about each other, and still we still have to will it away. This last incident is one of those examples of what we have to will it away at, is those sensitivities that will cause division and cause dissension with us and keep us from working together. So still there's a whole lot of work to do emotionally for us. And that was trying to demonstrate it. Wow. I'm going to need somebody to mute. That's pretty loud.
Bishop.
Brother Marvell.
Yes, sir.
Hello? It's Larry. I'm just checking in.
Hey, Larry. Yeah, we're taking a pause to see if we can get we have some distortion in the background, and it's a little more than usual. So before we check in, we're trying to get this handled because we got our 89-year-old brother Bishop Williams that was on, and I think as he went off, he said he's going to eat his breakfast, but I don't think he muted his phone.
I'm still here. I'm still listening.
Okay.
Forgiving.
Okay, we'll just teach him. He's got a cell phone.
No,
right?
No.
I tried.
Okay. What I'll do is I'm mobile right now on my own phone, but I'll mute RRR and RRR will bring you back in because he's
okay.
On your line, RRR. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, sir. All right, Brother Marvell, we're moving forward.
Right on.
I see that this is a beautiful, beautiful show where we've seen two brothers come together in love and speak and get understanding. So I would like for RRR to send Big Money Grip Bishop numbers so they can get back into the conversation of moving forward in all that they have going on, so we all can be abreast of what's going on, so we can join forces, because it's going to take that to move that. And so I appreciate Manny for governor of getting in there and swinging that bat and hitting a home run with getting the attention of our listeners and our brothers to stay on course and stay focused. Them is wise words from one girl.
Right on. And so, to the listener, Larry, you weren't there. You weren't there since you just came in. You weren't there. But something that's usual for us, but unusual in the typical real world, and that is we had two brothers reconcile after a long period of division because they shared their positions, but they also relaxed their positions to look at each other and get to the spiritual aspect of our beings and their and each other's beings. They look beyond those things that, the like we call them circumstances, and circumstances are those things that circle and stand around you and oftentimes look like you look too daunting for you to penetrate, but they did it. They did it, Larry. And so we're pleased again to be in a forum where these big type of things take place. So, Larry, you on right now?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, lighten our hearts with a report from your grandson.
Oh, wow. He's doing great. Got A's and B's in school. Been wonderful. Still loving and looking forward for cooking. And doing sport, playing basketball or football.
He likes football.
Yeah. Well, he was doing both just a minute ago, so I have them both. So he was busy Monday through Sunday. We was traveling, doing everything. I don't know how I did it, but he made me young, feel young again. I'm 65.
How old is his son?
He's only 14. Only 14. Yeah. So he's doing wonderful right now.
Right,
he makes me proud.
And so, Larry, the reason why I ask, and the reason why it's a speakable issue on this format is because he is the only youth that comes to our men's healing group regularly. He is the only one. And you bring him and you put him around us, and he receives from us, right? So that's
correct.
A strategy. That's a strategy that I would dare to say has been, you know, unexplored anywhere else, because usually the men folk feel like the youth do. The youth don't want their parents around them while they're sharing, and usually the men folk don't want women or youth around them when they're sharing. But in this case, this young man was so much, demonstrated so much of a need to have the pouring in of spirit coming from our group, that hopefully that pouring some impact on where he is right now. And I think we deserve
to respect the guy. Oh, you hear me?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
All the guys. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. See, so this example is sort of like a model for what our young people can anticipate with the type of men that come into our format on Wednesday night and think that we had another breakthrough situation last night with one of the young men. You see, a lot of guys that come there are you know, like mature seniors, a lot of them, right? But we have young guys coming in, 19, 20, in their early 20s, right? And
right.
We have one guy come in several months ago that was struggling, and was struggling hard. We helped him, and we continue to help him, but he started coming in late to meetings every session, and then it just seemed like he'd come because he wants us to pour into his circumstance on the back end and not showing up on the front end. And so we got to get to that and kind of like, you know, they played the ball where it lies and let him simmer in his own behavior. And then I had a chat with him a couple of weeks ago about some of the behaviors that he was demonstrating, drug usage being one of them. And he came in last night and, man, this young man demonstrated what it looks like for him to get outside of himself and let the Spirit of God be the guiding force. And the things that he was saying and how he was saying it and how he's reflecting on where he is and where he was asking, he was there and saying things like, oh, is this what he was looking at his peers and their behavior. And he asked his peers and say, is that how I look like? Is that
right,
what I'm
Yeah, he was sitting right next to me.
That's right. He said that. You heard him. You heard him probably better than anybody. He was asking his peers, is that what I look like? Yep. And so now we're talking about how breakthroughs occur when we give each other a chance. Our breakthroughs occur when we congregate with each other and get honest with each other, and how we can pour into our spiritual and emotional situation once we have the vulnerability to share what's going on. And so it takes confidence and trust for that. And the only way that we can get that is if we start things together. So next week, the creek don't rise, next week we're probably going to be doing a men's game night. So if you play beer with spades, pinochle, chess, checkers, bridge, beer with, come on in. And if you don't know how to do it, come on in and learn. But we got experts up in there. They'll teach you real quick, because you get your head cracked a couple of times and you get tired, and you'll learn how to protect yourself from these guys, because these guys are the professionals. They've been doing it for years, but we're going to have a ball when we get together on it, because that's what it's about, learning how to get together, enjoy each other's company, learn a little bit something about each other so that we can work together and get this job done, because we have a job. I yield.
All right. Well, I say. What I was hoping to hear is dominoes. I didn't hear dominoes, but more importantly, this young man who's been coming late, I think it's important to relate to him that is a stigma that has been put on us black folks, where we have always been known to be late. And we call it nigger time. You late on color people's time. And so I want to relate that to you so that you can relate that to him if he's coming late, that we don't want that stigma to continue on our people because of you. And so it is that aspect that I'm coming from after hearing what Brother Marvell is saying to us, because I can only go by what has been, what I heard, and what I heard was that, and that's what comes to my mind immediately. Now, I'm still listening, because you know a wise man listens, so that's what I got to do. I got to listen. All right, I'm done. I land my plane.
All right, I'm going to pick it back up from there. Mr. Marvell, that gentleman that you say that continues to come late, first of all, have you asked him, why are you coming late? Is it a means of transportation, or is it means of, you know, something that you have that you're doing and it causes you to come here at a later time? And if you haven't asked him, you should ask him. And then what could you guys do to possibly help him get there on the time that you want him to get there? If he's on foot, or if he's on a bike, or if he's on a bus, can somebody pick him up to be there on time to get the blessings that he needs and get the information that he needs? I digress.
Let me speak for that. This is one goal. And so he has a brand new car he can drive up in there whenever he wants to. It's just that he has to think about things before he comes. See, one thing I know and two things to show. I said, one thing I know and two things to show. When you're addicted, your mind plays tricks on you. When you're supposed to be somewhere, you want to be there, but your feet won't move fast enough. And so I never, never criticize him being late. I thank him for coming. I don't care if he come at the last minute. But this is the part, though. Part is that you've been receiving money when you come in, so now you come at the end to receive some money. And so we had been pouring that into this young brother because we know his situation. And so once we stopped giving him the funds, he had to think, you know, I got to do better on what I'm trying to do for myself. So last night he gave a testimony that made everybody in the room feel that he has given his 100% on trying to make his change, which is not easy. So there's no reason for us to fault him for being late. It's just that you can't come late knowing that you have to be somewhere. I know you're going through your mind playing tricks on you, and we understand that because we know how that drug scene is. And so he's been coming, and he's been pouring out. And so if he comes late, it's okay. It's okay, but we don't want that. But him showing up is a major, major accomplishment. So that's what we look at, Mama Chocolate. He don't need a ride. Okay. He riding in a brand new BMW. He don't need no ride.
Right.
He don't
right.
need
he
no,
might
I,
be good.
I need a ride. I need a ride.
Right, right, right. And then just to solve the problem, you know, y'all stop giving the money. I mean, if I wish I could come up in the meeting and y'all just hand out money. I need a bill that need to be paid right now. But I'm being funny, but I'm for real. But then you guys just stop the money giving and give it to him in a different form, you know. But as long
we
as he's,
it.
You know.
We huh? done it, Mama Chocolate. We stopped
okay.
giving it.
Okay,
okay.
I just had to ask because that
oh,
was
yeah.
brought
you
up.
You know, we on point. We on point.
Right.
It's just that we had to let him hang himself. First, you
right.
got to let him know we're going to support you. But then after
right.
we support you five and six times and you ain't did no better and you ain't trying no better, then your water get cut off. And when your water
you
get
cut off
then
part.
You get thirsty. Then you get thirsty.
Yep.
Now you looking for some water. So instead of
right,
giving it,
right.
you so we own it, Mama Chocolate. We own it.
Okay.
Own it.
All right.
All right. I'll say. Brother Tim, let me just get this in real quick. How late does he come? And Double R said it best yesterday. Either we're planning to fail or we're failing to plan. Is he coming in 15 minutes, 5 minutes late, 10 minutes late, 15 minutes late, a half an hour late? And then at the same time, I didn't hear how much money you're giving him, but it's got to be worth something for him to come late like he comes. But at the same time, I'm glad to hear what I heard because it sounds like y'all getting things done in that meeting that y'all are having. That's counseling, and that's some good counseling that y'all doing. I know they're in good hands with you and Brother Marvell. All right, I said enough.
And so, about the money thing, we gave what we got in our pocket, right? And so. It's all good about that. We do that for brothers coming out of the penitentiary. We do that for brothers that's going through it and need it, such as Coach Stern. He was doing bad to come through. We dig in our pockets, man. We our brother's keeper, and we real about that, man. It ain't about playing with our money because I ain't got no money to play with or any emotions, feelings, or anything that's attached to it. I don't got time to play with it, right? But what I do want to say is that he comes in 10 minutes before we shut down, right? He makes sure he gets there before we shut down that we see him. And so that changed last night because he is there most of the session, which we are appreciative of him, right? And so it's work. It's work to work with your people that need help but don't want to help themselves. So I made it a point that he knew that we gonna help you, but you got to help yourself. I can't want more for you than you want for yourself. I can't do more for you than you want to do for yourself. But I can be my brother's keeper. I can check you when you're out of line. I can give you when I know your need is necessary. I can do that. I take my last pee and pop it just for my people, right? But to make a long story short, that's what this radio show is about. It's about honoring and keeping our brothers kept because a lot of times our brothers don't feel that they're kept, and so we slip away into our thoughts, which mess up some things that we could have going on. Now, what I want to say tonight is the women's night in the game room. So First Lady of Radio, Clarice, just got off. I wanted to tell her to show up tonight and help facilitate this room. Mama Chocolate, you in Monterey, so if you was here, I sure would want you to facilitate as well, because I've seen how you facilitate a room, right? And so maybe one of these weeks you can come down and sit with the sisters that's feeling some type of way about raising these boys by themselves, going through the struggle by themselves, and being able to talk to somebody that speak that same language. Mm-hmm. That's what we're bringing to our city, because we can't leave nobody untouched with healing. Everybody needs to heal, and you don't get healed. You continue to heal as long as you live. I pass the mic.
Okay, so
this is Women's Month. This is Women's Month.
Right, but we're gonna need somebody to be a little more conscientious about the about their background noise. Can we get some help with that? Very well, good.
That might be me driving. Hold on. That might be me driving. I'm sorry. My bad. One dog.
Oh, okay.
I'm driving.
That's all right. That's all right. You know, everybody just need to check their background and make sure that we're conscientious. Because what we want to do is we want to become more advanced and more professional, and more our delivery becomes more proficient as we go, because we're attracting a lot of attention, and we want to make sure that there's no excuses for why one won't tune in or why one won't pour in and what we're doing here. Because if you hang out for 10 or 15 minutes up in here, something going to happen to stir you up or to give you some encouragement. One of the two things is going to happen if you hang out for 15 minutes. But if you come in when it's a lot of distortion, you might not hang out but for one or two. So let's be more mindful of the potential of having background distortions if you're not on the mic henceforth, so that we can make sure everyone gets heard and get heard clearly. So, folks, listen. I heard a lot of BoJacks have successful programs. I'm sitting there figuring out. I don't even get it. I mean, I don't get it. You know, it doesn't seem like it has any real merit to it. It doesn't have any real. There has no spirit to it. It's all just carnal and all just verbal, right? But there's a spirit in these sessions that if you tune in and hang out, I think you'll feel it. You'll feel that the sincerity of each individual participating in this is obvious. No matter what their stance is, it's obvious they're passionate about it and they believe in what they're saying. Well, and we're getting to the point to where even though I believe in my truth, I'm not going to deny my ear to yours. And it's a good possibility that if your truth has merit, it will affect my truth and intensify my truth and make me have more variety of things to look at in my truth, just like my personal circle, you know, just like my world. There's my world, and then there's the world. And my world is comprised of only a chosen group of people, only a chosen group of experiences. But there's still that bigger world that I can draw from if I open up my eyes and have the willingness to look. So that's what we're doing here, is we're having the willingness to look, and then we're experiencing the potential for healing and healing while we're here. And I appreciate every session, because every session has one or two of those elements, and sometimes both. I yield. All right, so now let's I want to talk about one area that it was on my mind this morning, because several days we've been talking about the issue of reparations, and attached to that issue is this presumption that once our people get money, that we get seized by something that will make us squander it. And that's a purveying kind of thought process. I heard this dude, Dr. Phil, he proposed on his program, he said, I don't think it's a good idea for these people to get a lot of money, people who are not used to having any money. I don't think it's a good idea for them to have a lot of money, because all they're going to do is squander it. And that's a pervading thought process. And I don't know if it's a defense against allotting it, or if it's something to be wary of or be aware of to make sure you don't do it. I don't even understand the strategy, because if you're giving me what you owe me, how are you going to dictate to me what I do with it? So that's what I was thinking. But then I'm also thinking that our people have the same kind of response to money being allotted to a certain sector of our people, is that we're going to squander it. So I want to know what it is you think will compel someone to treat money like that and not be looking for an investment or looking for an opportunity to generate more, or to keep it cash flow where the money is working for them. What do you guys think is that thing that goes through the mind that makes us consider spending it rather than doubling it?
Marvell, I can't help but not chime in on that one. That's right up my alley, man. Anyway, what I was trying to say is that one person does not speak for all black people. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. We are all non-monolithic in our thoughts. We don't all think the same. And therefore, you're not in a position to say that all of our black people are going to squander the money. You don't speak for every black person in America. I got a problem with that. And for you to have the nerve and the audacity to think that we are all going to do the same thing, squander it, you're wrong. Now, true enough, we're going to buy everything up under the sun, but we want to make sure that we send a clear message that it's got to be a need, not a want, but a need. And then we got to feed their minds through churches and groups and organizations, whether it's the NAACP, the SCLC, or Urban League, or groups like ours right here in Sacramento. We got to educate them on what's coming down the pike. What do we mean by that, big money? Well, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to kind of con you, that's going to try to get you to spend, to waste your money, to swindle you. And we've got to be conscientious of that. And so we've got to have feedback from groups and organizations like you have every Tuesday and Wednesday night with the groups. What's going on in our community? What are they doing now trying to get your money? We need to be able to have an infrastructure in place to combat those kinds of things and let them see what's coming down the pike ahead of time. I got a problem with somebody making that kind of statement for all of our people. We're not all monolithic in our thoughts. We don't all think the same. We don't all think the same. And I got a problem with them thinking that we all think the same. Anyway,
okay, but listen to this. Because there should be a concern with someone making a blanket statement like that. However, it wasn't attacked as well, because there's a general ideology that exists with others observing us, and then even with each other, right? that kind of like sanctions that kind of, not the blanket it, but for the most part, you know, it's like yesterday I talked about reasonable doubt and shadow of a doubt. As long as there's enough evidence to create doubt, then you just make it difficult for you to stand in total opposition to it, because we had a demonstration of people being allotted money during the pandemic. And a lot of people squandered a lot of money, right? And a lot of people demonstrated whatever that is that I'm asking about. They demonstrated that want to have things over, let me put it like this, to have things which are personalities over principle, which are sound, reasonable considerations for how to put something into something and get something back out of it. We're the most targeted market for unappreciable goods in this country. Once we get it, the value decreases 30, 40, 50%. And unless you take it back the same day you got it or within a week and show that you didn't use it, you can't even get your money back. So that's why I'm saying there's something about the mindset. Once money is allotted to a certain sector of our group that seizes our people to want to go out and just buy stuff, to have frills and bling, you know, to like parade. It's like that's what I'm wondering about is where, you know, maybe nobody on this panel will be able to speak to that. But I'm hoping someone can help me understand why the seizure takes place when money is placed in certain members, the certain sectors and members of our group, that makes it look like they just can't hold on to the money.
Hey, I figured to comment on that. It's what it is. Every race has the same problem. It's just that we are they call us a lower class, and they think that we want all the fancy things and all that when we get a lot of money. But what we have some of our groups for is we're trying to teach one another before we get that lot sum, any kind of education, whatever it is that we're getting a lot sum of it from any one of our meetings or chapters or whatever. That's what we're doing now. We're trying to program our people and let them learn about financial things, how to invest your money. It was 50 cents. Like you say, keep putting 50 cents in a jar every day. Learn how to save it. Don't bother it. Do some yearly things and invest your mind, because no matter who gets the money and what race get money, everybody squanders money. These Indians been getting money for years. All of them are not doing good. They're out there on dope. They don't have no cars, and they get a check every 4 months. They're not doing good. So it's not only the black community. It's any race that gets a lot of money that messes it off. We just hope and pray that when this does come about, that we are ready for it, and those of us that know how to do financial things with money, that we will run into people that don't know, and we can teach them what we know. Because iron sharpens iron. If you got something, you know it, and you ain't tell nobody else about it, it's useless.
Who is that speaking?
Hey, Double R here. Let me tell you this. Dr. Field never mentioned the Black Wall Streets we had. Black Wall Streets, we gave our own people money. We exceeded the white people who got jealous and killed us. I yield.
You're right.
Okay, the question. Who is that spoke just before Double R? I don't think you identified yourself.
That was Brother Mitchell.
Oh, okay, brother. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so here's the thing. Nobody's going to, if you're speaking to plant a seed of dissension, you're not going to counter that seed with acclamation. You're going to keep on making that seed appear to be and deliver what that seed was planted to do. That's what I'm saying, is that
yeah.
seed is not just something that this white man planted. That seed is something that exists with us because we've even said it. But now when we hear that there's a potential. Somebody help me out with the mute, please.
I got him. That's Mark and Brother Mitchell. I got him.
Okay. So we've had a prelude, and we've even admitted that there's going to be some of our population, once allotted a considerable amount of money, that they're going to do with it, right? And so that's sort of like irrefutable. But what Brother Mitchell was saying is what these seeds that we plant here now is to be prepared yourself to demonstrate what it looks like to be responsible for your allotment, and then start creating atmospheres to teach our people how to respond. Because that's what I'm saying. The tendency is there, but what do we do? And first of all, it might be good to find out what is the gravity makes people want it. Because every time I get a little something, you know, I kind of hold on to it, right? And I ain't gonna buy into nothing unless it's a deal that makes sense to me. I'm not just automatically assuming that because I have enough for what I might want, that I'm going to go and purchase that and have no reserve. That doesn't make sense to me. So that's what I'm saying. It's like I want to be able to impart to those who might be experiencing that personally, or who know someone who might, that it's a good idea to start planting the seed of being a good steward starting now. Stewardship begins now in the ideology of the people that are anticipating these allotments. Stewardship and investment in self and in sound entities is the course of action for us to thrive once the allotment has been given, right? So that's why I'm curious. I'm curious to know, how do we continue to carry this message that, okay, when you get it, don't jack it. When you get it, we have something for you to consider. When we're planting seeds along the way, like, okay, when it's come, make sure that you're mindful that this is what you got coming, and you deserve it. Yet the people that be targeting you, they don't deserve it. They don't deserve it because you got it. So don't let yourself be targeted by the frills and the blings to let them swindle you out of it, or let them market you out of your money or your allotment. So that's what I'm curious about is how we perpetuate that thought process in our conversations and in our demonstrations. And I'll yield to that response.
Well, thank you for that, Brother Marvell. I really appreciate that, because that goes right back into what Double R was saying yesterday. Either we're planning to fail or we're failing to plan. And what you are taking a stand as a black man is showing us how we need to take a stand when it comes to us receiving this money. And I thank you for that, brother, because you're giving us some foresight. You're giving us the opportunity to be aware of, so that we could be in a position to deal with when the time comes to. And thank you for that. Now, I say that to say this. Back in the day, you all know, we had marijuana. Then came crack cocaine. Then came fentanyl. You have to make a decision. The brother came to me and said, Big Money, they don't sell no more marijuana. You want some cocaine? I said, no, I don't want no cocaine. Now, I heard you, Marcel, say that you had the experience of the cocaine. I'm one of those that didn't go that route, because I know how the white man is in terms of putting this stuff out there for us to gravitate to. I didn't do that, nor did I go the alcohol way. But at the same time, what you're doing now is making us aware of, so that we could be in a position to deal with when the time comes to. Reverend Rev, I think his name was Rev, yesterday said, we get some money, we get reparations, and we get a check. I'm not signing no check. No, it don't come like that. It's going to come the same way it came with COVID. when we got our COVID checks, whether it was 1,000 or 2,000, everybody in the state of California, it didn't come where somebody had to sign for it. It's going to come in our direct deposit, our snail mail, P.O. box. It's just that simple, and you got to qualify. How do you qualify? You got to be an African-American. Now, I have my reservations about African-American because I believe that a person white who was born in Africa can say that they are a African-American. And technically speaking, they are. They are white African-American. So I have a problem with African-American. I think it should be black African-American. But that's just me. That's just big money. But at the same time, I want to drop that dime on you as to how we need to strategize to get our people to realize that in spite of all past years' adversity, success can still be obtained. I yield back. I land my plane.
Right on.
No, it's not the white people can get it, man. It's that you have to have your people have to be slaves here. You do have white Africans, whatever, but was they people slaves here? No. If you read their report that the reparations did, how many pages is it? 1,100 pages or whatever. It says that, big money, I yield.
Yeah, that was my interpretation too. Not just being black in America, you have to verify your ancestry as being descendants. Before, I think it's what, 1860, something like that. But, you know, those technicalities, that's why the 490 bill was important, because that sets up the committees to do that research and to determine those factors, right, and to be able to trace, because, you know, you're gonna have all kinds of folks pulling up. When they start seeing that as a benefit, folks going to start pulling up. It's like they saw the benefit of you being locked in the house and you just got a check for $2,500. Then all of a sudden, they're blowing up on Facebook all these new products that's going to do miraculous things and all that. So we become a target. And the money becomes a target for anybody, because a lot of people don't know this, but affirmative action, the affirmative action movement benefited white women more than it did anybody else, especially us, the affirmative action. So when things are put in motion, they are put in motion with specs, our unique experience, are the specifications that have to be met in order for you to be eligible, right? And so that's a good thing. That's a good thing, because we won't have a whole bunch of Bojacks pulling up trying to say, well, you know, my cousin on my grandmother's side, second removed, was a slave, and they could be Asian, they could be any ethnicity and come with that and muddy the waters, right? So it's a good thing that they have those provisions. It's a good thing for 490 to be able to appoint or solicit those professionals who can do that. So I'm still kind of wondering. I'm just curious about what it is, deep-seated, deep-rooted, what it is that makes it so that anybody, when they get a little money, that they get out of hand and lose focus. That's what I'm curious about. Just totally lose focus on anything beyond the immediacy. And I think I have a theory about it. But that's my same one that I've applied to before, is that the practice of limitation, the elephant that was on the tether, and you cut the rope, and they only still go in that little circumference and don't know that they can break free, right, and then go where they want to go now. But that tethering made it so that they felt limitations in where they could circulate. So I still contend that has something to do with the thought process, is that we only think about what's going to make me feel good in the short term. And buying this stuff is something that makes me feel good. investing in it, that's mid to long term. I ain't on that. I'm just on what's going to make me feel good right now. And I wanted to examine that to see if there's something we could suggest for one to think a little bit beyond the immediacy and look toward the midterm or to the long term in the future, because it's a rarity to find that someone in our group dies and leaves an inheritance for their children. That's a rare thing for me to hear, and I want to know why. I want to know why. Well, so I guess nobody has a theory. So maybe just we need to marinate, and maybe need to consider. Because what I just said, I just want someone to answer this. Do you know anyone who in their demise has left a legacy for their children and their grandchildren? It doesn't have to be wealth, but just provision for them to be able to be planted and launched from something that you left or was left as a result of your demise. Does anybody know anybody like that?
Yes, sir. This is one gone. And I must say, I have to give honor to my grandfather. I'm his first born grandson. His name is Reverend J.D. Griffin. He had left me a legacy of service, right? He's been a servant of the community. When preachers was going to bail young men out of jail, when preachers was helping form people to help remodel homes, when preachers were coming with bags of food for the shelterless, when the preachers used to go to the hospital and really pray over those that were sick and shut in, when preachers used to really have Bible studies to where, you know, it was all about God, not them, right? I want to give my grandfather his honor due right now for teaching me that, for showing me how to be a servant of the people. With that being said, I'll pass this mic.
All right.
Okay. What's that?
This is your topic. My grandmother, I have to say this, may she rest in peace. She was the matriarch of my family. She born six kids, and she did leave something behind. But what happened in the midst of that, she had six kids. One of them passed away before her. And what she left, the family did not, well, the family was decided half wanted to keep what she left behind, and the other party didn't want it. And so it caused a separation between the siblings. And so because of, and let me say this, it's about wills and trust fund, you know, and trust and what you, and how you go about when you have kids and when you leave something behind. So my grandmother didn't do a trust. And so the properties that she left behind, it was sold. And so it kind of ripped the family apart. But it taught me it taught me something to where when I am able to buy my, you know, a home or whatever I leave back for my kids, it's going to be in a trust. So that way my children don't bicker and argue and about, you know, what was left, what mom left for each of her children. I digress.
Ashe. Well, this is big money. I was raised by my grandmother. Her name was Gertrude Griffin. And she didn't get me till I was about 12 years old. I'm from a broken home, guys. I was the first black to ever go to college from New Jersey, from welfare. But that being said, I want to get right to the crutch of what Brother Marvell was talking about in terms of the legacy. And it doesn't have to be money. But what she taught me was how to be thrifty and how to, I guess you could say, use my common sense. And that's the one thing I learned from her, was to be diligent in what she done. Now, what did she do that showed me that she was diligent in what she done from the age of 12 to the age of 18? She would get up every single morning and go to New York, jump on that bus and go to New York to work for them white Jews over there cleaning their houses. And we had a wonderful house. I lived in a decent home when I lived in Inglewood, New Jersey. But what she taught me was how to have discipline in getting up and going to work and not overeating. I think that's the key. She showed me how she kept her body in shape, how she stayed in shape, and how I had a paper route, and she would get up in the morning and put my sections in the paper and wake me up, and I would have to get up and go out and deliver the papers on every Sunday morning. And she just taught me how to do things right. And then when that infamous day came for me to go to college, and I had to go to the airport, it was a moment of truth. And she told me before I left, she said, Morris, because my first name is Morris. She said, Morris, if you come back home, you're going to have to pay rent, and you're going to have to pay for the light bill and some da-da-da-da-da-da, and you're going to have to be under my rule. And I knew then whether or not I wanted to do that or not. So when we got to the airport, and it came time for us to depart, the way she broke away from me, let me know, Negro, you on your own. Either do it or don't do it. And I cried. I cried like a natural born baby. But the way she let me go, the way she, I guess you could say, divided us in that hug, let me know right then and there, you on your own. So I came on out to Yakima Valley College and got my, you know, scored 1,000 points in 2 years and went on to Washington State and graduated and did whoop. But at the same time, I have to admit, what she taught me, y'all going to see when I come up to Sacramento. Y'all going to say, well, you made it, brother. Sister told me the other day when I was at Sizzler, she said, well, you over. You 74 years old, you over. You know, so it is what it is. But I just want y'all to know that it takes a strong woman. It took a strong woman to get me where I'm at. She was a Libra. I'm an Aries. She was a Libra. And so she taught me well. But I left there, and I've been on my own ever since, guys. And so y'all are now seeing the product, the I guess you could say the results of what she made me into. I'm qualified, I'm bona fide, and I'm certified, and there's so much more. But I digress. I land my plane.
So here what I'm hearing. I'll tell you what I just heard. I heard that the legacies that we experienced from our predecessors were more intangible than tangible, and even the one incident described where there was tangibility, there was discord at the end of that tangibility, because now people are at odds with each other because of things and money. So the intangibles, the value of the intangibles probably overshadow the value of the tangibles. Yet the tangibles have more power to create division and dissension in families. In families, people who grew up together, and someone dies and leaves something, and then they're bickering over the remains.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about, is what kind of thought process seizes one to get to that stage, forgetting about everything that happened prior to and letting the one thing that's there cause havoc, dissension,
mm-hmm.
division, even hate. I know people who have had these kind of situations where they don't talk to their siblings anymore because
here,
of this
here.
Type of circumstance.
Yes, yes.
They don't talk.
I can agree.
Right? So that's what I'm asking. I'm asking to delve into your personal experience, your observation, or your theory about what it is that makes it. And see, I'm going to give you this, and I'm handing the mic over. I had a class that I worked with. These were 10, 11, 12 graders, right? They're getting ready to graduate. They're juniors, seniors, and freshmen and all that, right? So I came in, and I used to work with words. I came in with a sheet, and I had it folded where you couldn't see the word. And so I proposed to the floor. I said, what is the most worshipped thing by man? And most people said, God. And I said, what's the second? And they said, money. So next to God, money is the most worshipped thing that exists in our consciousness for the most part. Not all the time, but for the most part. So that's what I'm saying is that when we look at the power that money and the illusion of money has, I said illusion, A-L, not illusion, but illusion, what we refer to the power of money, that's what I think is important for us to examine because we came from the natural order. I don't even know if I ever heard of anything but bartering and sharing and building together when it comes to our ancestry. I don't remember seeing no coins with no black faces on it or no bills with black faces on it. I don't remember that. They probably have them now because that's currency now. But where we came from, where our ancestry came from, we helped each other and we built together and we shared and we bartered. We gave you give me a service, I give you a service. You give me something you handmade, and I'll give you a service, or I'll give you something I handmade. We all had that consciousness about sharing. And so that's what I'm hoping that we can get a little bit more closer to analyzing what it is that compels us to allow money to have so much power over us. And I'll yield for response to that. Dun, dun, dun. All right, we can switch up if that's a bit much to contemplate right now. I just hope that you'll give thought to it, and maybe we can revisit it at another time. It's just that my observation.
Could I speak, Sherman?
Sherman, come on home.
So could I go back to where Big Money Griff was talking earlier? I have a friend that he has over 20 kids, and only 4 of his kids are black. The rest are mixed with another race. And so will all his kids get these reparations? Or will just 10 of them get the reparations? Or 7 of them get the reparations? And so on and on. So melodic is the word. So the kids that aren't all black, they're not going to stay with another black person. They're going to, more than likely, they're going to go be with a white person, I would think. Next question. So when my parents died, my mom went and she had a will, and it went to the family court over there on Power Inn and all that kind of thing. My dad was afraid of banks. I mean, this guy was so afraid of banks when he died, let's say 4 years before he died, some people came in and did an in-home invasion robbery in his house and killed his brother instantly. And they robbed my dad. Anyway, so he had this money hidden somewhere else, not in his safe. So anyway, long story short, so when he died, he left all his children like $4,000 each, and then he left his grandchildren, which was like 15 of them, you know what I mean, $1,000 each. I mean, it's all in a mindset of person having to think about bringing a lawyer in. It's so important. I mean, our grandparents and our parents didn't have the thought of taking care of business like that. So like myself. So if I die today, all that money I made goes to the United States, because there is no way I could capture it sitting here broke. I land my plane.
So the mindset, you said the word, you said mindset. And that, to me, that means what you already preconceived. And until such time as something persuasive enough comes across your consciousness, that's probably what you're going to act upon, is what your mindset or your mind is set to act upon. And I'll keep on urging and pointing out that on this particular broadcast, there are opportunities to look differently and alter or change mindsets just by opening up situations and looking at them closely and saying, I didn't know I was thinking like that. And now that I see that, I don't see no future in it. Me keep thinking like that. And that's hopefully what we all can stimulate in each other, and hopefully we can arrive at a consensus, meaning a one-mindedness about the body, what's best for the body and what's best for the group, if we get in accordance with one or two of these major principles. And one of them is that money. And Dexter Atterbury talks about it a lot. Somebody mentioned, Mr. Sherman speaks about Dexter Atterbury a lot, and I listen to him frequently. And we've even had him come to our men's group and share his overview about how our group would benefit from looking at money and those values differently than we do right now. Because they work against us. If we're not thinking about how to make money work for us, because right now we work for money. We trade our time for money. And so when we get the money, it seems like we want to celebrate the fact that we have it, because all the time we invested to get it, I need to feel good about it. All that time I put in to get this little bit of money, so whatever I feel good about, that's what I'm going to put it on. Instead of thinking about, okay, well, I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm going to trade my time for money until I can leverage my money so that I don't have to spend my time to make any more. I can reproduce, and I could duplicate myself, or I can create a residual, or I can create a royalty that continues to pay me while I'm doing other stuff. So that's the kind of thing that I think is a course of action in the thought process and in the mindset of our future. It's always looking for the investment that's going to give a return and help build a legacy and help build what they call generational wealth. Generational wealth, not just a stipend. I left something so somebody do something. They might pay their rent and you know, do a few things. But after that, it's back to grinding. And we shouldn't have to grind anymore in this country. We shouldn't have to grind anymore in this country. And I'll yield with that. Oh, I was checking my phone. I thought I was muted.
Double R. Double R, it's your turn to step in on that black African-American and African-American situation that the brother was just talking about, that's half black and half white or half some other ethnicity. We like to table it or identified as mulatto, but, you know, it could be what Obama is, you know. But at the same time, I need you to address that issue because I'm thinking, and you don't have to agree with me, I'm thinking of a percentage of blackness in that blood that determines what you are in terms of black African-American or African-American, whatever, however you want to do it, bro. You know, you do you.
I did my DNA. I got 26% French, but all the black countries and continents, I got 57%. Ain't nobody here is 100% black. We all got something in us from the chattel slavery, from our people getting, ancestors getting raped. Ain't nobody 100%. But if you got 1/62nd black in you, you qualify from Adolf's, African descendants of slaves, and I yield.
1/62nd. 1/62nd. That's deep. That clause.
Because we got a lot of Indians too, or brothers that are black Indians too. So that is deep. That is deep. And is that in writing?
Yes, sir. If you have any bit of blood in you, brother, you come down to 1/62nd.
Mercy. Ain't no wiggle room there, baby boy. Hey, if you 1/62nd, if you can trace your ancestry back to slavery before, what is it, 18? Is it before 1860 or 1890?
It's 1865 was when we had the Emancipation Proclamation, but actually 1863 when Abraham Lincoln signed it, but it wasn't until 1865 when it came into effect when they dealt with Texas, you know.
But 1/62nd, and you can trace back to your ancestry being in chattel slavery, then you're eligible. And that's why that 490 is extremely important. Because when the caucus did their bill presentation, I think they had what 12 bills that they talked about, but they kind of skirted over the 490, and I was curious about that. Why we didn't hear about the 490, and we were signing. We were calling the senators and sending letters to the Senate about the Bill 490 because that's the origin of eligibility. So I'm curious to know if anybody knows anything about that aspect of the reparations movement. What happened to the 490?
490 is